80% of all of your customers, and I'm not talking generically or to Donald, I'm talking about you, listener, 80% of your customers are getting input from other people and being challenged. You're being challenged about whether you have the best product. So they're asking people, they're disrupting, and they're saying, here's a guide. Ask your guide.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode of Aligned, Sean talks with the sales evangelist, Donald Kelly, about helping relationships. In this episode, they discuss the best practice of building frictionless buyer journeys, understanding the buyer's point of view, and the nature of guided help. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Hello, everybody. This is Sean Doyle, the host of Aligned, the podcast for executives who are looking to close more deals and specifically want to see sales and marketing alignment. We're here today, as always, with our guest, Donald C. Kelly. Donald, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Sean. I'm excited to be here. This topic is one that, oh man, I'm so pumped. I think we're going to have a good conversation. I know we're going to have a good conversation today, and hopefully we can help some marketing and sales team come together.
Absolutely. Here's the promise of that. Like, who cares really if sales and marketing is aligned? Who cares? Well, here's why we care. Because if we can get sales and marketing aligned, we're going to get more deals across the finish line. I was reading some research the other day from Sandler. I refer to it as the 60-40 rule. And this research was saying that 60% of the people leave their last provider, the incumbent, because the service deteriorated, they no longer felt valued, and they didn't fulfill the promises they made. So 60% of the people leave somebody, leave their current provider for those reasons. And I was thinking about late stage sales. How often do we get to the closing table or in that one-to-one negotiation and we don't touch that at all because we're so centered on ourselves when centricity says we should be centered on the buyer's needs? So if the buyer, Donald, if the buyer is worried, if you're the buyer and you're worried about service, promises, and not feeling valued, and all I do is talk about my products and my services, does that resolve what? Maybe 40%, if my math is good, of your problem. Yeah. Do you have a good story of like when you got to the finish line, you're the sales guy and didn't close because you talked about maybe yourself?
Sure do. Plenty of them. One in particular come back to is when I was selling software. It was one of the largest deals I worked on. So naturally, the challenger in this situation was something called status quo because they've been doing this process for so long that they didn't necessarily, I mean, what's going to be, if they've been doing it for like 30 years, 40 years, what's the problem with like another year or two? And luckily our champion was a friend of ours. I built a good relationship with him. And I was going in like that sales guy, talking about our product, talking about how it's going to be great, how it's going to help and all of this stuff. And then he came back and he was like, listen, this is not going to fly, because he knew the board and what was going to work. And he said, Donald, in order for us to get this pass, what we need to do, we need to express a little bit more of the value. I need your help to guide the student's process. And essentially what he wanted was that business case a little bit deeper. He didn't quite see, even though he can, on a surface level, he could see that this could solve a problem, but he didn't see the business value behind it. Mm-hmm. It did take some more work, but I could have worked with marketing on this, and later on we did gather good intel that was able to help us. But in that process, I was going in with a hammer, Sean. Salespeople sometimes going with those. Everything is a hammer. I want to fix this, screw this thing in, use a hammer.
That's right.
Make a hole, use a hammer.
It does work. You can put a screw into a wall with a hammer. Sometimes it does work.
Not going to be the best. But
it's not going to be the best. But so I mean, there's this pattern that centricity points to that we're going to talk about as we explore the best practices of building frictionless buyer's journeys.
Yes.
There's this pattern of not knowing what to do or not doing the right things at the closing table. There's a pattern of pushing marketing away. If you're a good salesperson, right, the biggest challenge is let's push marketing away from me, because marketing typically is really good at this early stage, early pipeline stuff. and a little vague on what to do in the end. Centricity teaches there's six best practices at the closing table where marketing can contribute, can equip sales, can lead, and help close more deals. So only listen to this if you want to close more of those late stage deals. That's it. That's the only reason to listen. And we're going to share with you one best practice called helping relationships. Donald, I think you talked about it in your story. Your buyer needed a helping relationship. They didn't need a salesperson to close their deal. The Sandler data, it points to products and services are important, features and benefits selling and all that. That is important because you are buying something to solve a problem. But there's so much more to the problem than just the piece of thing that you're going to buy, the service you're going to buy, the equipment. So there's more to the problem than that, but it takes a buyer-centered point of view to understand, hey, before I can close, not only do I have to sell my product service, I've got to help the buyer know that what I say is true. I've got to help them understand how to onboard it. They've got to understand if there's safety. They've got to understand what their risk is of making a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's all stuff beyond the product, service, feature, benefit things that we spend so much time. So before we push forward, let's talk about, and I should say, there's a great, here's the promise of the day. There's two techniques that are powerful, and we're going to share five application points by the end of this series. We'll probably end up talking two times, but you're going to end up with five practical things to do at the end of this. So the state of change, where are we in Centricity? So you're at the closing table and there's some symptoms, right? The symptoms of somebody and we've got our hats on diagnosing the buyer. You know, they're exhibiting behavioral change. They're delving into the specifics of what it is you're going to do for them, right? So as salespeople, we're excited because those are signals, and we're getting excited and we're thinking about the monthly nut we got to cover and possibly getting to be in the president's club and going to Europe with the chairman and all that good stuff. But that's the wrong focus, right? That I just turned that focus back to me as a salesperson and my needs. So the symptoms that we're seeing are that you do know there's budget. You do know there's resources assigned. There, people are actively problem solving and they're asking maybe even, give me a proposal, which again, if you're buyer focused, you don't hear this, but if you're seller focused, get me a proposal sounds like statement of work, purchase order. Yeah. Let's get the drill down. But so we tend to focus in too tightly. We've got to expand and understand there's more to the buyer's needs. So what are those buyer's needs? Well, the Centricity teaches, the behavioral science teaches, they need social liberation. They need to understand that other people have done this before them. They need to have made a private commitment to explore this idea and then maybe public commitment where they've shared this idea with other people. They've got to have experienced some sort of environmental control, some change around the way that it might change their business. Countering this idea of most buyers have a bad behavior somewhere in there, right? Even if the bad behavior is not buying your product and service and you've got a better one, that's a bad behavior. You've got to counter the behavior and then you've got to give some rewards. So those are five. What we're going to talk about today is helping relationships. So the idea of helping relationships, what is that? What is our goal? So our goal is to continue to inspire the prospect to make change. And how do we do that? And think about maybe the idea of giving a prospect an ability to make a commitment to explore this, to delve specifically into problems, and you as a guide can be part of that. Donald, have you ever heard of consultative selling?
Oh, come on. Yes, sir.
Does this kind of sound like that?
That definitely sounds like that.
How would you define consultative? If you were teaching and leading, for those of you who don't know, Donald has a leading practice to help people improve their sales operations. When you're coaching and teaching people consultative selling, what are the main points? What are you trying to explore?
Yeah, I mean, it really tell them to take off the salesman hat or a sales professional hat. And here's why. When it comes to consultative selling, you are, just like the term says, you're a consultant. You need to be, I feel that you need to be amazing at problem finding. Because in order to, the great consultants are those, they can understand problems that you may not even necessarily know. And that's why you rely on them. They don't tell you what you want to hear. They tell you what you need to know. and what you need to understand. So say, for instance, if I'm a business owner and I think that my poop don't stink and I think, you know, my company is perfect, a salesperson would say, yes, yes, everything is great, and be the yes man and agree with me. But a consultant might, they will tell, may say, you know, Donald, I want to point out something to you that's, I'm not, you know, you may not necessarily want to hear this. However, here's the challenge at hand. And if we want to fix the challenge, here's what we need to do. And the beautiful thing about a consultant is that, especially a consulting seller, they become the guide. And I know we're going to talk about Donald Miller, and I love his stuff. But the concept there with those consultative sellers, they've been in other organizations and they've seen similar circumstances like yours. So they know the landscape, and therefore they can speak to and solve problems that you, again, may not even know are problems and issues. And that's why we rely on consultants to help us to, they can give us a bigger view from what we can see, because we sometimes can't tell a tree from the forest. So essentially a consultative seller, they're asking, they're masters of problems, they understand problems inside and out, and they're great at solutions to those problems. And through that process, they guide the individual to help them to better understand how to fix those challenges or how to fix those problems. A transactional seller is just going in with a features and benefits and price, and they're going to push on closing and trying to get a quick deal. And I've been a part of those quick sales when I did door-to-door selling. You have 45 minutes to get someone to purchase a home security system compared to selling a, you know, $150,000 software solution to an enterprise organization. That requires to come with consulting capabilities, problem finding, strategic thinking, and being able to work with the client, because there's no tricking anyone in that. It is, they need to be empowered to make the decision. Gittimer says people love to buy, but they hate to be sold. Consultative sellers help people buy and don't try to sell them.
As data compliance laws become more stringent, many organizations will soon have non-compliant CRM data. Maybe you have insufficient first-party data, or you bought information from an improperly validated third party. However, you got it. Fixing it before the 2023 deadline should be a top priority. Fitzmartin's Wake the Dead program takes dead CRM prospects and applies a behavioral science model to re-engage them into your pipeline. In this process, you can reclaim old prospects or delete old ones, giving you a clean and compliant database with new opportunities from previously forgotten contacts. By retargeting with email and text automation, clients you might have considered dead or unresponsive will move forward and become potential prospects once again. For more information, check out the show notes or visit fitzmartin.com.
I think you just leaned into something really important, and that's trust. So you've got to have trust before you're going to allow somebody to guide you, right?
Yeah.
So I think your consultative selling, if you look at it through the lens of behavioral science, and for those of you wonky folks out there like me that want to read more about it, this is all based on the trans-theoretical theorem of behavioral change. We've applied it. We've taken a decade and used it in practice, in business, and built this model and applied it to sales and marketing. So this isn't just some crazy marketing guy's idea. This is vetted, validated science, and we've seen it make millions of dollars for our clients. So get off of that. The trust. What I'm really saying there is don't trust me. Trust the science.
Trust
so the science points to this guided help as one of the two techniques. The other technique is self-help, right? So people can do self-help. We'll talk about that in a second. I've got some examples, but let's stick with this guided help story.
Sure.
And I think what's important about the guided help stories is grounded in what you were alluding to with Donald Miller and StoryBrand. Everybody wants a guide, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody needs a guide. And why do we need guides? So Miller loosely paraphrased, if I could solve this myself, I already would have. Right?
Yeah.
So people do need a guide, but this trust thing, if you don't trust your guide, then the person can't be a guide. So if you demonstrate constantly, and good sales and marketing is about helping, not achieving your own goals, but helping other people achieve their goals. And if you're consistent through the whole buyer's journey, if you're free with your advice, if you have integrity, then this guide idea will work. If you see sales and marketing is manipulation and getting people to do what you want for your own best interest, then you need to forget everything. I'd go listen to another podcast if I were you. because this is all going to be around. Donald and I had the same point of view on that. We're here to help. You know, I was thinking, so what are some examples of helpers? You know, there's some natural examples of helping relationships. You know, we've done work in the education and manufacturing space, and there are naturally third-party consultants in that space. There's engineers that might build your design for your product or service. In the education space, there's counselors. There's literally admission counselors that their job is to be a third party that sits between two parties. So have you considered in the technique of working on guided help, have you considered identifying who are the consulting engineers, who are the third-party counselors where your buyers are going out and finding somebody who can be a trusted party? You know, that's the idea of that third party, right? It's trusted. It's the reason when you as a couple go for counseling, the reason you're going for the counselor is it takes a third party to give clarity to the situation, right?
Yep.
You can't self-guide. So education and manufacturing, and many people have these industries built around these third parties who do this, who are guided. Do you have a marketing strategy to speak to those third parties, to communicate to those third parties? Is that part of your sales call sheet requirements? Mm. I mean, if your salespeople aren't calling on these consultants, and they may not be, if you've got a commission design or a compensation design problem, then you're not motivating them to talk to the highly trusted third-party guides. Well, that would be an incredibly valuable person to talk to make sure they understand who you are, what you do, and how you help. Donald, let me ask you a question, another guided help question. What's your point of view on trade shows, speaking at trade shows, putting down everything you know on your website, kind of doing what we're doing right now? Like I'm telling you everything I know. Am I a fool for sharing everything I know? What's the and this is not a leading question.
Let me give you some context here, and hopefully listeners can take this and apply it. On Monday, we hit 4 million all-time downloads for our podcast. That's over 1,600 episodes that we've produced on our podcast. All of those episodes is where I either share our stuff or I share stuff from our prospects. I mean, our guests share things like just like you're doing right now. As a result of that, Sean, we have been able to partner with organizations. All of these organizations, either we've had talks with them or in talks with them, but we've partnered with LinkedIn. They've purchased several things from us. We partnership with Salesforce, and that's, you know, we've done pretty good with that. And now we're in a talk with Amazon. All of this, again, was because I share a bunch of free stuff, gave out the good stuff. And because of that, they come back. And I'll give one example here, especially going out on trade shows or going to conferences. It's a huge avenue. Sometimes people get caught up on trade shows on the wrong side. They feel that if I go to the event and I go and pay $10,000 and present and have a booth, then I can get leads. And yes, you can get leads from that. I feel that oftentimes if you can produce great content and share great content, you'll probably make more money in that than you can off the leads. So find opportunities to speak, not to speak with a trick to get people to buy, but speak with an avenue of the servant's heart to give information. And last thing I want to share too, because all of these people are coming to this conference because they're looking for those guides and they're trying to figure out, I need people or insights or help that can help my organization to get to the next level. So go with that mentality. Don't go with a taker's mentality. And then I go on podcasts all the time, like your show here. I spoke to a guy yesterday. I went into his company and spoke for free during a pandemic for 20 minutes virtually. They do a morning sales huddle. This guy was on the sales team. Now he's a leader on a sales team. He came to our website because he was speaking at their company kickoff and came to get content from our website, signed up for something. My BDRs connected with him, spoke to him, set an appointment, and now we're one of the runnings for their kickoff next year in Q2. So that whole idea of giving free stuff away, he loved it so much. Come back, get into our funnel, and now there's opportunity. So I can speak to this for days. I believe in it so wholeheartedly. And it's the one thing that's made our company to get to the point where we are. If there's one marketing avenue, Sean, that I would only do if you say take everything away and keep the I would only keep the podcast. And that's our main thing because it has worked so well in giving away tons of value.
So I'm going to put my client hat on. But please. Donald, what we do is it's intellectual property heavy. And if I get up and talk about it, I'm giving it away.
You know, and here's the thing. I can Geek Squad. Let's go back to Geek Squad. This is where I first learned about it. Geek Squad, their founder, when he told all of his friends and business associates back in the 90s, I believe, that he was going to create this company where he was going to show on the website how people can change their own RAM and fix their own computer. Mm-hmm. Everybody laughed him to scorn and said, this is not going to work. It's such a silly idea. But here's what happened with that, though. People started to try to fix their own RAMs and try to take their computers apart, and they got stuck or just kind of said, this is a lot of work. Why am I doing this work? Clearly, these guys know how to do it. Let me ask Geek Squad to do it. That's precisely what happens because you demonstrate your expertise. And we're going to talk about this. Now you're getting me excited, Sean. I need to get a bottle of water because this is going to, you're going to see this. You're going to see this come back to the self-help side when we talk about that. And you're going to see this come back to the guide side. But I would rather say, who would I trust more? I'm going to trust David, whose company Secret Everything, and they say, you got to come and you got to figure it out. Or will I trust Mary, who demonstrates to me she knows how to fix my specific business problems on her website or through the content she shares or at a trade show? I'm going to trust her, and I'll be more than willing to pay more to her as well, because she is that consultant rather than someone that's like, you got to cloak and dagger. You got to come back in here and give me something first before I give you stuff. And I don't know. That era can't survive in this era like that.
You're fired up, Donald. I love it.
You got me. You got me, Sean. You got me going.
The only problem is anybody under 40 has no idea what you're talking about with installing RAM. So that's the only problem with your illustration. I think that's 100% true. We have a client who has an expert PhD in batteries. So in this world of electrification, I know I didn't know it existed either. So in this world of electrification, while everybody is trying to figure out how to electrify our cars, our clients doing electrification in some really interesting remote offsite, off-grid spaces. And this person is going to be speaking at a marine conference. He's going to share a PhD level of everything he knows about batteries. And I thought it was really interesting. I thought batteries are batteries. Like one of my questions, an ignorant question was like, well, what's the difference between a Porsche, electrified Porsche, and an electrified Tesla? There is a difference. There's a difference between power and distance and stamina, the type of batteries and how they're utilized and the content of the batteries. And then you get into, there's even moral issues with batteries. Where's cobalt, lithium cobalt mined? And it's kind of like the blood diamonds from 20 years ago. Like the same thing's happening with batteries. I learned so much about batteries. I am no more equipped today to electrify anything I do than I was before I listened to Ben Gulley speak, the PhD. And he is brilliant. We're going to publish as much of his work for our client as we can. He is going to position himself by speaking. So you and I are on the same page on that.
Yeah.
I did not know what your stance was, just for the record. I know we've been going a little while. We got to give people a break. So I'm going to give one more example of a guided help story, and then let's take a break, and we'll come back in the second episode. So we have a client that also is in this guided help space, and they're in a compounded medicine space. And it's similar to that consulting third-party engineer. If you think about the medical space, the B2B side of the medical space, there's prescribers who are in that space that have to be marketed to. You know, we all see drug ads, and the reason I share this is such an easy demonstration. We see drug ads that are pointed to us. Ask your doctor about whatever, Ozempium, or they're always kind of crazy names. That's a good example of a guide, and that's an interesting technique. I pointed out it's very similar to that top helping relationship we shared, but it's an interesting technique because you're going to the buyer. And we would call it pull in marketing. It's a pull. So you want to go to this third party and ask and request for things. I rarely see B2B companies use that technique. We see it a lot on the consumer side, but I think it's a valuable challenge because it puts a question in the mind. And one important note that the behavioral science gives is 80% of all of your customers, and I'm not talking generically or to Donald, I'm talking about you, listener. 80% of your customers are getting input from other people and being challenged. You're being challenged about whether you had the best product. So they're asking people, they're disrupting, and they're saying, here's a guide, ask your guide. You know, what I think's interesting is, think about the relationship I have with my doctor. It's a trusted relationship. What the drug companies want me to do is go to my doctor and give my doctor advice. Well, he's the authority, actually, to women as doctors. So she's the authority in that space. And that, but this company is teaching me to question that authority. And I think that's a pretty interesting model to explore as this guided help. There's all kinds of ways to use guided help. And then there's, you know, kind of a specifying industry. An easy example of that is a carpet company who we helped grow from about 40 million to 180 million. And the way we did it, yeah, it was decent. I've been invited to the owner's 500 acre farm, or was it 5,000 acre? I can never remember.
It's 5,000. I like that.
It was 5,000. He measured his fences in terms of miles, not acres, actually. So. But they did very well. Neat guy, helicopter pilot in the Army, so was very aggressive and pursued things hard. But the whole spin there was, Donald, if you're in an office right now, you're in your studio, I can see it. You're standing on carpet.
Yes.
You probably did not choose the carpet. You may have made I want this over that color or whatever, but there's an architect or an interior designer that specified that carpet. Or you may have said, I want this carpet, and they substituted that spec. So there's a whole world of guided help that involves things like architects, interior designers, the people who are doing the planning, the design, building your plant, building your end product, where there's a substitute, a spec can be substituted. That's another marketing channel. So on these guided help things, I think we've just got to talk through all of these, you know, building the relationships on trust, having other-mindedness, being centric on the buyer is critical to have that trust. And I think we alluded to compensation design earlier. The other thing you've got to do is give your sales team and your marketing team permission to not sell. One of my favorite things to say to a client is, a website should be designed to turn away 80% of the people that come to it. One of my favorite metrics we ever had with a client is they had 40,000 visitors a month to their website, and our objective was to get it down to about 4,000, to which you say,
wow.
Well, why would you do that? Because it was bad traffic. It was traffic. You can buy traffic, but who cares? Yeah. We didn't need traffic. We needed good traffic. We needed lead quality. So, you know, you've got to have permission to not sell to everybody. And that comes down to a classic business conundrum of, you need to have more opportunity than you have capacity. If you have less opportunity than you have capacity, you're always going to be forced to sell, even if it's not a fit. So business owners have to create situations where you have more opportunity than you have capacity. That's not a new concept.
You become very selective at that point.
Yeah, well, you do. And it gives sales the ability to not chase commission, but chase fit.
Yeah, they don't have commission breath at that point.
One of my consultants is the great, my favorite example of has more opportunity than capacity, has a page, his name is David Baker, has a page on his website, and he literally lists his 5 to 10, I can't remember how many, competitors that he thinks are good. Listen to the courage there. Here's my competitors. I can't help everybody. I may not even have the ability to help you. So here's people I trust. That's strong. That's confident.
That's a confident man right there.
And it's, well, he is, but it's authentic, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Selling Challenges research from Richardson said, you know, it's more authentic to share ideas and information that don't end in a pitch. Mm-hmm. If everything you share ends in a pitch, you lose authenticity. You lose trust.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about self-help stories. You had some interesting examples. I can't wait for you to. We're going to start there. Then we're going to dive into 5 applications. Let's go. Let's come back. You ready? You going to come back?
I'll come back. I'll come back for this for sure, man. This has been awesome. Thanks for having me, Sean.
Thank you, Donald. Donald, how do I get in touch with you if I want to learn more about Donald C. Kelly?
The best places to go to LinkedIn. You can connect with me, Donald C. Kelly. If you want to get some free resources, go to thesalesevangelist.com to click on a resource tab, and you can get a lot of stuff there. As we said, we give it away for free. So check it out.
Awesome. And you're listening to my podcast, so you know where to find me. So, ha, Donald, thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.